Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 305, and we're going to talk about KISS. That's right, keep it simple, silly. It's important that you understand what's in your rig, and that means simplicity. We're also going to talk about a new stereo review that I have in my truck that I've been working on a long time, a tale from the road about road rage, and a place to visit that is literally a Hallmark movie, because people like these things. I'm not exactly sure why, but the Hallmark Channel is a thing. Anyway, thank you for joining me here once again, and I cannot believe we're at 305 episodes. Why, that's almost an area code, like the one in Miami, which means nothing. So I should probably just like talk about what I want to talk about here. Hey, I ran into a woman at VanFest last year, my last VanFest, sadly, because there aren't any more. That was the last VanFest. And I had offered to help out with people who had trouble with their rigs, you know, just little stuff. I helped a woman with a plumbing leak problem, and I helped another woman with a plumbing problem. They seem to be the most common. But it was all women as it happened, and that doesn't mean anything. It's just that's how it was. Oh, that's not actually true. There was a gentleman who asked me to help him out with a diesel heater as well. Anyway, point is, this woman's rig was a very fancy rig, and she didn't build it herself. She wanted everything built the best it could possibly be. She was willing to put money in this project, hired an excellent craftsman, and he built her a great adventure rig. I think it was a Ford Transit, fully decked out, ready to go. Very, very sophisticated electrical system, lots of batteries, lots of solar. Wonderful rig. And her batteries were dead and she couldn't do anything. And so she asked me to try to figure it out. And, you know, I'm like, okay, sure. I mean, I have an understanding of how these things work. I've built several of these rigs. I understand the principles of power goes in, power comes out, all that kind of stuff. So I'm hoping to find like a switch that's in the wrong place or a loose wire or a bad fuse or something like that. She shows me her rig, and inside the garage are all these batteries and a wall of little blue modules, some of which were blinking and some of which weren't. Now, many of you already know the problem, but this is what I'm calling the Victron problem. So Victron is the highest regarded maker of electrical components for vans and actually marine applications, sailboats and things like that. That's their real forte, but it bleeds over into van life. Very, very good stuff, very highly regarded, very expensive stuff, but also a little bit different kind of stuff. So many of us use, say, a Renogy controller or EcoWorthy or something like that, and you end up with this box that has a screen on it, and you learn over time that, like, what the error codes mean. You know, they're in the manual, they're in the app, and you get to learn how the symbols work. Like, this one means it's getting solar power, this one means the power is going to the battery, it's this many amps, I've collected this many amp hours today, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not obvious, but it's easier to learn than Victron, because the Victron stuff really doesn't have any information on it. Each individual module, and there are a bunch of them, has one or two lights, maybe. It may not even have that. And you're supposed to have a separate module that basically ties into all this stuff and tells you what's going on. And then, of course, there's another module for Bluetooth and whatever, and you can use an app. And I couldn't tell what was going on with her rig because she didn't have the app, and the module that was supposed to tell us what was going on didn't seem to be working. All I could tell her is that her batteries were dead. I brought over my multimeter and I showed her that the voltage was too low, and she said, "We're in Florida, it's full sun, why aren't these charging?" And she's right. There was sun, there were solar panels. The Victron system somehow was preventing the power from the solar panels from getting to the batteries, and I couldn't figure out why, because I couldn't see anything. I didn't even know what all the modules were. With the Victron system, you don't just have solar panels, solar controller, and then batteries. You have solar panels, solar controller, power distribution, current modulation. I mean, there's all these different little things, and they all serve a purpose, and they make a very robust rig. But when something goes wrong, you're done. Unless you have learned how every one of these things works, you need someone else to help you, and that someone needs to be a trained Victron person. It's not stuff that you can just figure out without going through the training, and Victron offers the training. And this is something that has led me to my stance on van life these days, which is, you know, keep it simple, silly. I'm not going to call anybody stupid. Keep it simple, silly. The best stuff isn't necessarily the best stuff because there are many, many different bests. You know, look at cars, okay? What's the best car? Well, a Formula One racer is going to be up there with the fastest cars. Is that best? Or a station wagon can hold a whole lot more stuff. I know, we don't have station wagons anymore. I'm old. Give me a break. It can hold a lot more stuff than a convertible. Does that make it best? Or is a pickup truck best because it can... Your best varies. And I think the word best is actually a problem. What we need to be thinking of more than best is optimal. What is the optimal setup I can have here? And optimal has built into it the concept of compromise. So let's compare the Victron system to the Renogy system I typically have, okay? My Renogy system is solar panels of whatever kind, wires go into the MPPT solar controller, and then wires come out of the solar controller and go into my batteries, okay? The solar controller is this big thing that's a little bit awkward. It's kind of too big. And then the way the wires fit in, that you can't really hide this thing. And I don't know. It's not the greatest configuration. The screen is hard to read sometimes. And from what I've read, their reliability is much lower than Victron. But the initial price is a lot lower, and I understand it. I can troubleshoot my Renogy system. I can figure out what's going on. And yeah, I've had to call Renogy. I did have a problem with a Renogy battery that, even though it had been charging all day, it still said it was only at 40% charge. And I'm like, what's going on? And I found out that it was a BMS problem, that in order to set the BMS up properly, you have to discharge the battery nearly to zero and then charge it back up a couple times so it knows what it's doing. I'm like, okay, now I know that, and I'm not concerned about it anymore. I had to call tech support for that. But the power was always there. I always had power. With my Renogy system, I have never had a situation where I was trapped without power. Now, compare that to her Victron system that she probably spent a few thousand dollars on. She was stuck without power. And looking at the big picture here, my system was better, but it was definitely more optimal because I am able to troubleshoot it, and that is worth a lot. She was stuck with no power and couldn't do anything about it. And that's the exact situation you're trying to avoid with these systems. So should I tell her to rip it all out and then go get a Renogy system? Absolutely not. Because there's another principle here, and I was just talking with some folks in Discord, and I jumped right on to record this because I think it's an interesting idea, is that you basically shouldn't install anything in your rig that you don't fully understand. Now, that's a really high bar, and I don't think anyone's ever going to meet... I mean, that's not true. Some people are going to get there. And I don't want this to be a barrier. It's more of a goal, more of something to strive towards. And let's face it, the vehicles I drive, I have a working knowledge of how the engine and the transmission work, but I don't know how everything works. I can't test for compression. I can't tell you that it's too lean or that this fuel injector is clogged or whatever. Maybe I could figure out if I had to. But they're very, very complex things, and I am not a master mechanic. So I've already broken the rule there. But it's still a goal. It's still something to strive for. And you don't actually have to take that advice. You can ignore it because there is another way you can go if you have the means. And that is to, instead of learning all this stuff yourself, you can have enough money and resources to have somebody else do it for you. Now let's go back to this lady with her rig. She hired somebody to build the best rig. She didn't do it herself. And because she didn't do it herself, she didn't know all the stuff in there. She didn't set up the Victron system. She didn't know what each module was. And there's the deficiency there. You either have to understand the system yourself or have a resource that does that you can rely on. And she didn't have that second part, which, by the way, I'm not blaming her for. Whoever set the system up should have set her up with either training or a conduit to help or something like that. And she was angry with the builder, and I think that's somewhat justified here, because she should never, ever, ever, ever have been in a situation where she had no power after spending, I don't know, over $100,000 on this rig. So if you're building out your rig, or if you have a rig that you just got and you're like, I have no idea how any of this stuff works, you should try to overcome that somehow. And you can do it either way. You can learn all the systems yourself, take them apart, put them back together, see how they all work so you know that you can troubleshoot them and fix them. Or you can gather your resources and come up with a list of who you're going to call for whatever thing goes wrong. Like, do you have an electrical person who can help you out? Do you have a plumber who can help you out? Do you have a mechanic? You're going to need a mechanic. Almost all of you guys are going to need mechanics who can help you out. And that was, you know, sidebar here, my Sprinter, that was the big problem, is I could not fix the resource problem of the mechanic. It was beyond my capabilities, and I could not find a reliable mechanic that would work on it, and that was what ended up killing it. Of course, the fact that it needed a mechanic so often didn't help. But that's how van life in that particular van ended for me, was because I couldn't finish this equation that I've just set up for you. Now, I don't like setting rules, so I'm calling it a rule, but it's not a rule. It's a principle. It's something that you should consider, because I have seen so many people come up with a budget, I've got this much money to spend on a van, and they will get the fanciest thing they can get for that money, not knowing how to fix anything. And they just go out and they don't know what an amp is or a watt or why water doesn't come out and why do I have to flip a switch for water? I don't have to do that at home. You know, I've seen this many, many, many times, and you're going to have a bad time. There is nobody who has ever done van life or owned an RV who never had a problem. I challenge anyone to say that they, I've been camping in my rig for 10 years, never had a problem. You are lying. You're either lying or someone else is fixing the problems for you. These are complicated, very highly anthropic pieces of machinery where stuff's falling and breaking and everything moves. Stuff will go wrong. That is what you are signing up for. You're going to pay all your money for this thing and you're going to have things go wrong. Yay. That's what we're all in here for. But it's overcomable, obviously. There are tons and tons of us out here doing this, and we've done it either way. Another resource you can have is community. You know, a lot of times people go to these events basically to meet people and ask for help. That's totally legit. I mean, I helped 4 different people when I went, and I've got a friend named Scott who's finally out in his rig. He helps people constantly. In fact, it took him years to build his rig, I think because he was spending so much time helping other people. And I'm going to mention Scott a little bit more here. Scott has a Victron system, and he went to school to learn how to use it. Victron offers classes that you can go to. They're like weekend classes. And I was supposed to go to one, actually, but something happened at the last minute and I couldn't. It was in, motorhome land in upper Indiana. If you've ever driven through Indiana, you know where I'm talking about. And they teach you every component, how it works with the other components, how to troubleshoot it and everything. And that's exactly the right thing to do. If you're going to go the Victron route, which is quote unquote the best, you got to spend the time to learn how to use it and troubleshoot it as well. And sometimes that's a bar that's too high. For me, I'm perfectly happy with Renogy. I understand they've got reputational problems, but you know, it's simple to me. And I'm going to keep it simple, and I will always have power. And if the thing breaks, I'll probably know why, and I can fix it. And that gives me a lot of confidence. And a lot of times, that is the biggest factor in enjoying van life. Tech Talk. Let's talk about clips. Very exciting stuff here. No, I'm not talking about that weird little chip clip thing that's on a lot of Sprinter dashboards that always gets broken off, and then the new owner's like, what went there? That was actually for like parking tickets and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the clips that hold door panels on. So if you're going to build out your own rig, or if you're going to do any kind of modifications, eventually you're probably going to want to remove the door panels. and they're held on with these clips in most cases. The old days, they were screwed on. You know, undo the screws, you take the panel off, you put the screws back on, you know, it kind of made sense. But nowadays, not so much. They're all done with clips, and the reason they're done with clips is because it makes the initial assembly of the vehicle quicker, which is a very big deal in the cost of vehicles. So on the assembly line, a guy can just pick up a panel and snap it on, bang, 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 and it's done and move on. The problem with these clips is they're not meant to be taken off. You can take the door panel off. I mean, it's not a permanent installation, but usually the clips will break, and then you're like, oh no, I broke my van. So I'm telling you that it is okay to break clips. Any kind of clips, anywhere in your vehicles, little plastic clips that hold anything in place, it is okay to break them. But what do you do when you break them? Well, first thing you want to do is learn how the different clips work. Some of them just snap in and snap out. Others have a little pin in the middle that pops out. And you put the clip in, and that pin goes in and locks it. And you got to take the pin out before you undo it. There's a bunch of these, and you're going to want to spend some time looking at them and figure out which kind your vehicle has. But the ultimate solution to the clip thing, and this is what I did in my Sprinter, because the Sprinter had these really brittle clips that it was almost impossible to take out without breaking them. So I bought a big bag of clips. I bought a bag of 100 clips off eBay. You can find them on eBay or Amazon. You have to know what you're looking for. And that's the hardest part. You basically have to start this by ripping off a door panel and seeing what the clips look like and then finding them. You can buy bags of mixed clips. That's not a bad thing to do either. They're not very expensive. But the bottom line with taking off door panels and insulating behind them or running wires or whatever it is you're doing is you're going to break clips. And it's okay. Don't worry about it. The mechanics break clips too. Anybody working on a car in a car shop or especially a body shop, they've got boxes and boxes and boxes of these clips because they break all the time. The panels are not meant to be taken off that often, so the manufacturers don't care. But you do. So buy yourself a bunch of extra clips. And if you're in a situation where you have a panel that you're going to be removing all the time, consider not replacing the clips and consider fastening that panel in another way. You're modifying your vehicle. It is okay to put in some Velcro or some screws or whatever you need to do to hold that panel in place so you can take it on and off. That is completely fine. I'm giving you permission to do this. Product review. So, I have finally made the video for this stereo that I put into my truck. I have put 4 stereos in my truck now. I think I'm done. I think the next time some manufacturer says, hey, we've got this new stereo, why don't you try? No, thank you. Because for 2 reasons. One is I'm really tired of ripping that dashboard out and breaking clips. And I'm also really tired of just having to learn a new stereo. But this new one, I think, is a good one to end on because they did something really different with this. So the company's name is Top Display. And I will start off by saying that they gave this to me. It's one of these typical reviews. They give it to you, and my thing is, you can give it to me. I'm going to give you a review. I'll make a YouTube video. I get to say whatever I want. End of story. That's how I do it. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. And that's how I did it with them. And I like it. I'm saying that honestly, that I like it. There are things I don't like. I'll talk about them. But overall, I like it. And I think it's probably the best solution I'm ever going to find for my particular truck, which is a 2019 Ram 1500 Classic. A lot of folks with stereos in their vehicles that are going to want to replace them have a number of problems with that, because it's not like the old days when I started replacing radios in cars in the 80s. They were basically all the same. There were 2 different sizes, and they all plugged and played. And you had to cut wires to do it, basically. You cut wires and spliced them. That's how you did it. You didn't have to worry about which manufacturer it was or anything, because they all used the same basic style. And then the Ford Taurus, I'm blaming first for this, they came out with a stereo that was like molded into the dashboard and was different, so you couldn't ever replace it. There was literally nothing aftermarket for it. And then that just became the norm. And now every darn thing has a different way of doing their stereo, and they've put buttons in the steering wheels, and, you know, it's very, very complicated. But the aftermarket has caught up, you know. A lot of stereos these days work over the CAN bus, which is like the computer network that's in your car. And that has made things a lot easier. So I'm only going to talk about this truck here because that's what I have. But everything I'm talking about here could apply to your vehicle. And a lot of this actually will apply to ProMasters because they have a very similar stereo setup. One of the difficulties is that in RAM vehicles, you control many of the car's features through the stereo. So it comes with a stereo and you set, like, you want the headlights to stay on after you turn off the car, or you want the headlights to be on in the daytime, or you want the horn to beep after you lock it, all that kind of stuff you actually set in the stereo. And if you replace the stereo, you are taking away the interface that controls those things. Now, the dealer has a different interface. They can change these things for you, but you probably want to be able to do it yourself. So this stereo and the others I've tried, they actually have that built in. There is a huge menu in there of the different vehicles this thing could be in, and one of them will be for your vehicle. It's probably the one that you bought it set up for. And then there's this massive menu in there where you can turn these features on and off. And on mine, it has every single feature that RAM ever came out with for their trucks, most of which I do not have. I mean, everything, there's parking radar in there, 360-degree cameras, all this stuff for the RAM 3500s, not just the 1500s, that I will never, ever get to use. So that's good. The way they handle the steering wheel is they have a button for every possible steering wheel button, and then you can program that. And you can make them do whatever you want. Like if there's a button to start a phone call, you can change that to mute the stereo, for example. You can actually learn. So that's kind of cool. But the one thing I didn't expect them to do with this stereo was replace my air conditioning controls. So the dashboard where the stereo is in these trucks is... it's not small, but there's a limited area here, and most of the stereos are like the size of a mini iPad. That's the biggest screen you're going to get. What Top Display did is they came out with one that is like a Tesla screen. It's this massive screen, bigger than any iPad, and it stretches all the way down the dashboard. It takes up basically the whole dashboard between the vents. The entire dashboard is screen. And that eats up the air conditioning buttons and knobs and stuff. And at first I was like, I don't know that I want to use a touchscreen for all that thing, all that stuff. I mean, one of the problems I have with Teslas is that you have to use a touchscreen to open the glove box. And I think that's silly and I don't want to get to that point. But it turns out they knew that. And on the sides of the screen, there are buttons for all the common stuff you're going to do. There's fan speed up, fan speed down, temperature up, temperature down, turn on the air conditioner, turn off the air conditioner. The hazard light switch they also took, so the hazard lights are on there too. And on the other side, there's start a phone call. There's a knob. This thing has knobs. A knob for volume up and volume down, and another knob for track seeking. And there's buttons inside the knobs. One of them turns off the screen. The other one mutes the sound. I mean, that is amazing. I love that. And the screen itself is a full-on Android tablet. 100% functional Android tablet with cellular phone access for internet. And it even comes with a SIM card with 2 gigabytes of free data on it. So you don't even need to hook your phone up to it if you don't want to. You can just use this Android tablet with every Android app there is. Google Maps, Zoom phone calls, YouTube, Netflix. Yeah, you can watch Netflix while you're driving. If you're an idiot, don't do that. But you could. That's amazing. But it also, of course, does CarPlay and Android Auto, which is what I use because those are designed to be used while driving. So I have an iPhone, so I use CarPlay. The way it uses CarPlay is interesting because it takes advantage of a new thing called Smart Display Zoom, and it actually takes up the whole screen with CarPlay. It used to be that larger screens couldn't do that, and they'd only have CarPlay up at the top. Now you can use the whole screen with CarPlay. That kind of wastes screen, if you think about it. You don't need the whole screen to be CarPlay. So CarPlay now is modular, where you can have the map on top and then your music in the corner and then like notifications of upcoming events on the side, or you can have it have written out instructions for your route or whatever. I love it all. It all works. And this is subjective, and I didn't do any like scientific testing of this, but I think it sounds better than any of the other stereos too. Lots of bass response. This is one thing you'll notice, I think, with any stereo that you're going to put in when you replace the stock stereo is that the bass sounds better, because they're usually in modern vehicles, and you know, we're talking about a 2019 here, so it's not that modern. There is some sort of subwoofer or big speaker to produce bass, and the stock radio doesn't take advantage of it. And that just might be a marketing thing. Well, if you get the upgraded radio, you can have the premium sound. And actually, the premium sound is just that it uses the stuff that's already in there. I don't know how they do that. But this is what I have noticed, is that after I've messed with the settings, the sound has been much better. And this is where we need to talk about the problem with these things. The settings. There are probably 6 different screens of settings, and they're all over the place, and trying to figure out which one has the setting that you want is very difficult, and there is no manual. None of these have had manuals. This one had this little tiny instruction thing that was fine. It showed pictures of what you were supposed to do, and that was good because I was able to figure out what plug went where and all that. But as far as figuring out what setting goes where, holy cow, it is hard. I have done it. I've got it set up exactly the way I want. Everything works. So that's great. But it took some time. And these are Chinese companies, and they're translating stuff into English. So there were some typos, like Google was spelled G-O-O-L-G-E, which I reported to them, and they're supposedly going to fix. And stuff in there, I don't know what it was. There was something called Magic Button. On or off, Magic Button. I mean, I think I want the Magic Button, but I don't know. So I left it off. I don't know what it does. There was another one called Faction. Does this, like, if you're going to be in some underground faction, like overthrowing the government or something, do you press this button? I don't know. I left that one off. All right, I left it on for a little bit, but then I turned it off because I felt guilty. Anyway. That part is a challenge, and you're going to have to get over that. The other challenge, which wasn't that big of a deal, was the insulation. So this is a heavy unit, and the insulation was a little bit more intricate than most of them. It came with its own screws, and you have to use the screws that come with it because they're stronger than the screws that the original stereo came in. And there was one part that you really needed some physical strength to get the top to hook under the bezel and then screw it in. I mean, you had to bend plastic out of the way. At first, I thought they sent me the wrong one and that it wasn't going to fit. And then I realized that it was that tight because it needed the strength. Also, when you install one of these things, this is going to be true for any of them, you're going to have a ton of wires that you have to very carefully stuff into the dashboard so you can actually put the stereo back in there. And that takes a bit of organization. The other thing I'll say about these is that this is, again, I've done 4 of these now, I forget, but the backup camera is the biggest issue that most people have. For me, in all of these, I've literally just plugged it in and it's worked, but a lot of folks have trouble with it, and I think the protocol for the backup cameras has changed over time. What I like about this stereo in particular is that it let you change the settings for the backup camera, like how many frames per second, whether it was PAL or NTSC, all this stuff, and while that's technical, I happen to have a background that I understood it, but it's figure outable. On the other units, the backup camera would work or wouldn't, and you didn't have any visibility. You didn't know how to troubleshoot anything. So that's actually a good thing. And one last thing I'll say about it that really made me happy. You can use CarPlay and the internet at the same time over the hotspot on your phone. I never bothered hooking up the SIM card or anything because I knew I was always going to use the internet on my phone. I don't want another phone plan just for the stereo in the car. And on all the other ones, if I turned on CarPlay, it turned off the internet for the tablet part. On this one, the tablet part works, so you can go into the tablet and fire up Google and get a whole screen display of Google and then just switch back to CarPlay. That's awesome. I'm really glad that it does that. By the way, if anyone ever does this, the program that you care about is called Z-Link. Z-Link needs to be installed on your phone, and it will be installed on the stereo. This is the emulator that does Android Auto and CarPlay, because none of these things are certified. They're emulating CarPlay. They're emulating Android Auto, which for me is fine. I don't care as long as it works, but I suppose at any time Apple could turn it off. I suppose. Maybe. I don't know. These things have been out for years and they haven't done it yet. Anyway, I will have a link in the show notes to the video I made. I really like this thing. The company also makes smaller ones, which are a lot more affordable. That's another drawback of this one, is that its retail price is $995, which is an awful lot. But if you're somebody who drives a lot and you are relying on your radio to keep you entertained and awake, it is probably worth it. It does take a while to get used to some of the things. Like now I have to press three screens deep to turn on my heated mirrors, which is weird, but I justified that by realizing that's not one of the features I use all the time. I want the features I use all the time to be easy, and if something is a little bit less often used, it can be buried that deep. You can't bury volume. You can't bury switch tracks. Those I use all the time, and this one has them right up front center. So that's it. The name of the company is Top Display. They're a new company on the market, and their website is ustopdisplay.com. Again, links in the show notes. They've been very good about back and forth with me. I ask questions, they answer them. That has worked really well. So I think they're going to be there to support the product. And it's a really nice product. It feels well built. It looks nice in the vehicle. And I'm really happy that I have it. And I'm pretty sure this is the last stereo I'm going to be putting in there. Tales from the road. So I had an incident. Yeah, I had an incident. I drive, a few hundred miles every week. And people drive crazy. And I can say, oh, people in Chicago drive crazy. And you'll be like, oh, no, people in Pasadena drive crazy. Like, it's Atlanta. That's where the craziest drivers are. Have you ever driven in Boston? And let's face it, there's crazy drivers everywhere. And if there's one thing we all have in common, it's looking at some other state and saying that's where all the problem drivers are. I know Wisconsin thinks that it's all the Illinois people up there, but I've seen some Wisconsin plates doing some pretty sketchy stuff. Just saying. So, if you're driving, you're going to have incidents where someone's going to do something to anger you, and you're going to do something to anger them, even if you didn't mean to, and even if you didn't do anything wrong. So I had an incident where I was in Chicago traffic in my truck and, it's a big truck. And this guy was coming onto the freeway, the expressway, the Dan Ryan, I think it was. And when you're coming onto an expressway, typically you yield, right? The traffic that's moving can be nice and let you in, but they don't have to. It's up to you to merge safely. And so it was really congested, and I normally will leave space for folks to come in, but there just wasn't a way to do it that was safe in this case. So I just maintained my speed, and it was incumbent upon him to slow down and wait until he could get in traffic reasonably. He did not think that was how it should work. He thought I should have somehow found a way to make him a whole. And what he did was he just got closer and closer and closer and he was trying to play chicken with me, and he couldn't. I mean, there was literally, I had a car in front of me and a car in back of me and a car to the side of me. There was nowhere I could move. And I'm in a big truck, so I'm not feeling all that intimidatable anyway. I suppose I could have slammed on my brakes and made space for him. And then the guy behind me would have had to slam on their brakes and so on and so forth. But that wouldn't have been safe. So, I made eye contact with him and let him know that I saw him, but I wasn't going to let him in because there was no safe way to do so. So he gets all the way up to the end of the entrance ramp where it's about to, he's literally going to run out of space, and then gets on the shoulder. And he's going on the shoulder, keeping even with me, yelling at me out the window, why am I not letting him in? And I'm like, I'm not having a conversation with him because there's no way to, but I don't know what to do with this guy. And so in front, three cars in front of me, there's a little bit of a space, and he zooms up the shoulder, kicking up all kinds of dirt and beer cans and whatever else is over there, and gets into traffic. And I'm like, okay, dude, whatever, you're in, it's fine. And, I'm annoyed, but whatever, I'm not about to do anything about it. So we just go, and I think that's the end of it. But it isn't, because he has a point to make. So he goes into the middle lane, slows down, and then gets even with me on the driver's side, rolls down his window, and he points at me to roll down my window. And I'm like, why? What purpose could that serve? We're not going to have a conversation here doing 50 miles an hour in traffic, and I have nothing to say. I'm not going to justify what I did or explain it under these circumstances. I mean, let's go for a coffee and talk about our differences. Yeah, maybe we could have done that, but no, we're not going to do that. And so what did I do? Well, I've been driving a lot. I have driven many, many, many miles. I've seen lots of things on the road, and I've gotten angry at other drivers. I know what that feels like. But I also know what the best outcome is in this situation. And the best outcome is for him to go away. And the fastest way to get him to go away, and the safest way to get him to go away, is usually to completely ignore him. Completely. Now, it doesn't always work, because sometimes guys like this have to make a point, and they may like try to force you off the road or something like that. Had that happened, I would have done something different. But as a first step, I thought, I'm just going to ignore this guy. And I literally just faced forward and kept driving at a steady, safe speed and pretended he wasn't even there. And for a good 3 minutes, he zoomed ahead, zoomed back, honked his horn, flashed his lights. He's like waving his arm at me, you know, as much as he can. I think he was in a Camaro, but that just might be a stereotype. Sorry, Camaro people. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to let you get it out of your system. Yep. I just kept driving straight. And then finally, he zoomed up ahead and I never saw him again. And that was the best possible outcome from that case. I mean, oh, sure, there could have been some karma where a cop suddenly appeared and arrested him or whatever, but I'm not hoping for that. I'm just hoping for safety for everyone. And that is a learned behavior. That isn't something I grew up with or that I was just, oh, yeah, I'm going to go along to get along with everybody. And that is not my nature. Ask my friends. They will tell you that is not my nature. But my nature is to try to learn. And I have learned that there is no winning in a case of road rage. Doesn't matter how right you are. Doesn't matter how egregious the other person's actions were. You're driving. Drive. That is what you're doing at that moment. I talked a while ago about fly the plane as a thing. You know, pilots have lots of things to distract them, and so they're constantly being told, fly the plane. Well, this is fly the plane, but this light is fly the plane. Same thing when you're driving. Drive. Doesn't matter what else is going on. You're driving. If there's a reason that something needs to be dealt with, pull over and deal with it. In a case like this, if this has gotten much more aggressive, I might have done just that. I might have pulled over to the shoulder, put on my hazard lights, and just waited. And if he did the same, then I would have left and pulled off on the next exit and driven to the nearest police station, which is actually easy to do now because you can say, hey Siri, drive me to the nearest police station. Oh, no, I was not you. No, stop that. See? Jeez, I tried to be quiet and it didn't work. Okay, yeah. Everything's fine, Siri. We're all good. Don't call the cops. We're good. Okay. That's a learned behavior, but I think it's a good one. I think I try to drive cooperatively. I'm not racing with anybody. I'm not competing with anybody. I'm trying to drive in such a way that I will let people in when I can, and when I can't, I can't, and I won't. And I feel like if everybody drove that same way, it would be much more pleasant out there. But the most important lesson of all of this is if you're ever involved in a road rage incident, don't be. Get out of it. Drive the car. Do not engage. I know it's frustrating. I know it's infuriating that some immature jerk is putting people's lives in danger on the road, but you're only going to make the problem worse if you engage with them. You are right. I'm on your side. I believe that you are right and you were not the one that caused this incident. I also believe that even if you did, road rage is not the proper response. Everybody makes mistakes out there while they're driving, and when it happens, think that, okay, well, I've made a mistake like this before. I'm going to let it slide. That's maturity. See if you can get there. But again, it's training. Training is often the overcoming of emotion. When this happens, you're going to feel like this, but behave like this. That's a lot of training. And see if you can do it. Just keep that in mind. The next time someone's a jerk to you on the road, see if you can do two things. Number one, see if you can put themselves in their shoes or think of a time when you also have been a jerk on the road, because I'll bet it's happened. And then if something starts to escalate, refuse to participate. 100% completely refuse to participate, ignore the person, drive the car, and only take action if you need to. I wish everybody drove like that. There'd be a whole lot less bad things happening in the world. But I don't know. People get behind the wheel of the car and they're different people and suddenly they have to compete. There's a whole lot of psychology here that I can't even begin to figure out. But I'm pretty sure I'm right that my approach is the best way to get you home safe at the end of the day. A place to visit. So I am deep, deep, deep into this Aurora book, and 100,000 words I've written, not all of which will appear in the end product, but you got to get the stuff down in order to whittle it into what you want. So I'm getting near the end of writing the first draft of every single Aurora, and I'm working on East Aurora, New York right now. And it has really stood out among all the Auroras, and all the Auroras have something crazy interesting about them, but East Aurora is special enough that I'm going to mention it to you as a place you should visit. Now, I can't even begin to explain to you why East Aurora is west of Aurora. There's a reason. It's very complicated. And I will just tell you that East Aurora doesn't exist. East Aurora is Aurora. The other Aurora is not. And now everyone who lives in New York is very confused and angry with me. And I'll have the explanation in the book. That's all I can tell you. It's incredibly complicated. But yeah, that's literally how it is. However, in common vernacular, everyone refers to this place as East Aurora. It's an Erie County on the western half of the state. And it's this crazy, amazing little town that has this history where presidents lived there, and this guy who was sort of a utopian and developed this whole brand new arts movement, and it was called, well, Arts and Crafts Movement, the Roycroft Movement. Stickley was also part of this, and they have a campus there with all this amazing stuff, and that all came crashing down when the Germans blew up the Lusitania, because the guy who set this up was on the Lusitania. And he wrote this thing called A Message to Garcia by Elbert Hubbard. That was the guy's name. He wrote this story called A Message to Garcia, which is very popular in military and in leadership groups. And it's just a simple message talking about work ethic and getting the job done, etc. That was written in East Aurora, New York, and it has lasted all these years and basically set the tone for all different kinds of leadership stuff, which often misinterpreted, but that's the way those things go. Okay. So there's all that. That all happened there. You can go visit Roycroft. That alone is a reason to go to East Aurora. The other thing you can visit is what happened after the Roycroft movement utterly collapsed during the Great Depression. So you have this town with all these unemployed craftspeople used to working in wood, and you have factories and no one to work in them during the Great Depression. And then these two people and their wives were heavily involved in this, and it's a shame that they don't get as much attention. Their names were Price and Fisher. And if those sound familiar to you, it's because you hear it usually as Fisher Price, the toy company, the one who made the little beagles that squeaked as you pulled them and their little tails wagged. Yeah, that's what the Roycroft movement turned into, although not directly. Fisher Price and their wives got together and came up with a line of toys, very simple, handcrafted wooden toys, and they had a workforce and factories there waiting for them. And they came up with this scheme that people could take work home with them and work from home. Like if women had kids to care for, because, you know, this is back in the 30s, they could do that by bringing work home and like assemble the toys at the kitchen table while the kids were playing or doing dishes or whatever kids are supposed to do. Anyway, very progressive, very successful, because you probably have had Fisher-Price toys. I know that I had a ton of Fisher-Price toys, including the squeaky little Snoopy dog that I know very, very well. That's still there. Yeah, I know they were purchased by Mattel and the toys are made in China now. That's the story. But the factories are still there. And not only is that, they have a big toy store there. Like all the stuff is available in this big toy store they have on campus, which is on Little People Drive, by the way. And they also have this thing called Playlab, where they use the kids from East Aurora to prototype toys. So they'll set up the toy room with all these toys, lots of them new toys that no one's ever seen before, and just let the kids loose and watch them. And they see which toys get fought over and which toys get thrown under the table and ignored. And they use that for like future marketing of the toys. It's pretty amazing. That's there too, and it's still there. And Millard Fillmore's house, like I said, there was a president there. Okay, it was just Millard Fillmore, all right? Not everybody can have a grade-A president growing up in their town, but Millard Fillmore maybe got bad shrift. He was president during a time where there was a lot of strife, and he was a compromised president. And, well, if you know anything about history, you know what I'm referring to there. Anyway, You can visit his house too, because it's still there. And the thing that is really weird to me about this town is that when you drive through downtown, it looks like a scene from a Hallmark movie. You know, it's just everything's perfect. There's all these little shops and everything's open and there's fancy lights and people are going from shop to shop and they've got their bags. And oh, look, there's a big, huge Five and Dime. And there's a model of a 10-foot tall store clerk sitting on top of the Five and Dime. He's wearing an apron and he's smiling. And it turns out that guy's name was Vidler. And that Five and Dime there is the largest Five and Dime in the world. And it's right there in the middle of downtown East Aurora. And so this is not a crazy idea because, indeed, this is where Hallmark films Christmas movies. I kid you not. Hallmark has filmed at least two movies in this town during Christmas because it's a Hallmark town. Now, I don't know that the people are having all the weird drama and stuff that happens in Hallmark movies in the town. Maybe they are. But it's that cute. This town, for whatever reason, has set up this identity for itself, and they're not going to let anybody mess with it. It's one of the few towns in America that Walmart approached and say, hey, we'd like to put a Walmart in your town, and everybody banded together and said, hell no, and they won. There is no Walmart in East Aurora, New York. There's a Walmart in Aurora, Missouri, I can tell you that, and it's a big reason the town has money these days, but all the local businesses downtown are closed. Anyway, East Aurora is absolutely a lovely place for a number of reasons, and if you're driving, let's say you're doing a leaf peeping tour in Western New York this fall, which would be just amazing. Heck, go to the other Aurora in the Finger Lakes too, which is a whole other story. I should probably tell that story. That's a crazy story too, but anyway, today we're going to talk about East Aurora and how it's kind of the Aurora that all the other towns want to be. Like, if you imagine a small, prosperous town in the Northeast, you are imagining East Aurora, New York, officially known as Aurora, New York, although no one believes me. That's just for your consideration. If you can't make it out there, you can always watch a Hallmark movie. Resource recommendation. Yeah, I'm going to talk about junk mail. No, so junk mail. Okay, time out. This needs some context. Junk mail, as we know, is mail that everybody gets that nobody wants, right? And it's responsible for keeping the U.S. Postal Service going. So as much as I find junk mail annoying, it's important because it literally is funding most of the Postal Service. Nobody sends letters anymore. Nobody gets bills in the mail anymore, at least not like they used to. Everybody is doing stuff online, and all that stuff that used to be letters is all done online now. And of course, that has taken away a lot of revenue from the USPS. So one of the things keeping them going is junk mail. Now, I live in a condo, and we used to have a trash can right by the mailboxes, and you would just go down there, and people would take out their mail, sort through, maybe keep one thing, and then throw 20 pieces in the trash can. It had to be emptied every single day. And I am not afraid of doing that, because most of that stuff is crap, but I do look through, because occasionally there's the important thing. Now, down at Tiki Bago Land, our river property, where there isn't even a house, we do have a mailbox, and that mailbox gets junk mail. We don't ever get anything but junk mail in that mailbox. The mailbox is just there to mark that there's an address there because we established that address. That property had never had an address before. And, you know, it's stuff that, like, furniture sales and, oh, mattresses and, you know, nothing I'm interested in, except there was something that I decided to look at, and it was a catalog from the Illinois Valley Community College, which happens to be on the hill overlooking the property. They're our neighbors, basically. Now, I don't have time to go to community college. I'm not trying to get an associate's degree in anything. It's typically not something I'm interested in, but I flipped through, and there was a ton of amazing good stuff in there, and a lot of it was available online. And I realized that, holy cow, this is a great resource for van life folks. So the resource isn't junk mail. The resource is actually community colleges. I can only talk about this one because it's the only one I looked at. But some of the things they offered were history classes and how to deal with AI and a lot of really topical current stuff. And you'd have a college professor teach you about these things on Zoom, basically, which is a great resource in and of itself. But then I looked deeper and I saw they had all kinds of welding programs, carpentry programs. I mean, if you were going to build a van, like say you were going to build a van next year and you had some time and a little bit of money, I mean, these things cost money, but they weren't crazy expensive. It's not like you're going to be spending $70,000 a year to go to the school. You know, these courses were anything from $40 to $400, maybe a couple thousand for a longer welding course, maybe. But you could actually start by taking carpentry and welding and maybe electrical from your community college. You're not going to get a degree. Who cares? You might get a certificate if that's something you were looking into. I mean, if you're looking for work, I keep saying this, but welding is a really good place to work, folks. Your community college can probably do that. I have no reason to think that Illinois Valley Community College is any different than any other community college. They're serving the community around them. So they have courses in agriculture. They have courses in nursing. They have a big truck driving school. You know, those aren't things I'm typically interested in. But they had a whole lot of other stuff I was, and I'm kind of blown away. And unfortunately, I don't have time to take anything right now, but I'm going to. I mean, there was a History of LaSalle County course that I really want to take because LaSalle County, Illinois, has a crazy history, and I'm kind of involved in it now. I mean, our property used to be owned by a friend of Abraham Lincoln, and the hill that the community college is on is where Lincoln mustered into the U.S. Army or some sort of militia for the Black Hawk Wars with, apparently, so what Hal tells me, the son of Alexander Hamilton, I think. And they would have overlooked our property from up there. So, you know, it's kind of cool when you can make these connections to major historical events. So, anyway, I've talked too much about this, but yeah, take a look at your community college. Check your junk mail. See if there's a community college flyer in there. And if there isn't, just figure out where your community colleges are, what resources you have. They often have discounts for people who live in the community or in the state. So consider that. You might need to prove residency of some sort. But maybe not. I don't know. Check it out. It can only help you. Well, folks, thank you for listening to episode 305. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. I'm about to do a bunch of traveling again this fall, and I will be sharing those adventures with you, but I don't think I'm going to have any chances to meet with anybody. If you happen to be in Malaga, Spain, in November, I think I might have a chance to meet. So if you are, get in touch. But until next time, remember the words of Albert Einstein, who said, "Everything should be made as simple as possible, but not simpler."